Lineouts. Racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles. Dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, a productive weekend for South African teams in Europe. The wins column decently populated. Wins for the Bulls, the Sharks, the Stormers. Lions didn't get the job done against Cardiff. But I think there are two teams that will be happy with that they got the points, but maybe not so happy in the way they achieved it, because the Bulls and the Sharks left their respective home grounds with a bit of, if not soul searching, a bit of head scratching.
Yeah, I was at Loftus, and that game, I mean, you know, it wasn't Leinster's best team. Saying that, they are an extremely well-drilled team, and with players like Jordy Barrett and Erkie Snyman, they've obviously got a lot of talent in their team, and those two are huge for Leinster either way. But yeah, it wasn't a great Bulls performance, and in Jake White's words afterwards, he said they did stupid things. And I think my concern is that this Bulls team hasn't really, you know, dominated at home. You know, they lost to the Sharks and the Stormers at home. They lost to Northampton Saints. And in the last year, Glasgow won the final there, and Munster also won there. Loftus is no longer as big a fortress as the Bulls like to make it out to be. Altitude, teams have learned to counter the altitude. And Leinster played the perfect game against the Bulls. Their defense was exceptional. And they really struck when it mattered. And yeah, the Bulls did really stupid stuff. You know, the street smarts wasn't there. And give them credit though. They stayed in the game. They came back with a second half more try, two more tries. One was a penalty try and the other one was Johan Grobler going over. But all in all, I don't think any Bulls player would say this was a great performance. And then, of course, the monster scrum that they had at the end, the 83rd minute, all Leinster had to do was get the ball in and out, and they couldn't. And the monster scrum got the penalty. And David Creel, like he did against Benetton earlier in the season, stepped up and kicked a last-gasp penalty to give them the point. So they'll be happy, but I don't think any of them are going to be crowing about the way they played through the 80 minutes.
You could almost make the argument, though, that although they lost the game, Leinster took more out of it. If you consider the second-string nature of the team, obviously there's still international experience in that side, but it was far from the best team. To have run the Bulls that close at something that they can bank, that actually is a very good experience. They didn't get the win, but you suspect that sort of second-tier player, not, I wouldn't call them second-tier, but that caliber of player would have taken an awful lot out of that, and their coaches would have learned a lot about those players.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing as well is teams are learning how to play South African conditions. Leinster are a well-drilled side. They're clever in the way they approach games, and the way they approach this game was spot on for a team of their nature. And yeah, you've got to give them credit because they were unbeaten until the 83rd minute of this game. And that means, you know, there were several other games that they played without all the internationals as well. And they won those games. And their second string team, if you can call it that, is probably, as we said last week, better than probably eight teams in the competition. So they're a very well-drilled team. But yeah, the Sharks are going to have a tough game against them. They're definitely a tougher prospect than they were in the last couple of years. And the fact that they've only won one game in South Africa against the Lions over the years is something they want to rectify. You could easily see them giving a big go against the Sharks this weekend.
Mm. And on the evidence of the Sharks' most recent performance, you could make the argument that they would probably go down there with a bit of a spring in their step. But there again, I mean, you never know what you're going to get from the Sharks.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I wrote something earlier this week, which sort of concerned me, is about, and it was more going on the Lions' performance, but the Sharks and the Bulls' performance fits into that mold as well, is that how our South African teams don't seem to plant a knockout blow, especially at home. We've seen it over the seasons. The Bulls especially let teams come back at them in the second half. It's happened several times. The Sharks are serious, I don't want to say Jekyll and Hyde, but they produce performances where they sublime. And then in the same game, and Saturday against the Zebra was the same thing. They were up 14-0 after 5 minutes. And you thought, geez, they're going to run away with this game. And then Zebre came back. And the Sharks kept on playing the loose. They had a clear forward dominance. But they kept on playing away from their forwards. And that allowed Zebre back into the game. And Zebre has been a giant killer this season and will be very disappointed that they didn't win that game. But yeah, South African teams, and just, I mean, we could talk about the Lions as well, but in their game, they had 65% possession, 67% territory. They dominated every single stats. I think they had 220 odd carries to like 60. And yet they couldn't beat a team like Cardiff. And Cardiff tackled their hearts out. I think they topped 250 tackles in that game. But yeah, the Lions were their own worst enemies on the attack. And yeah, they've got a 3-on-2 overlap and Morris Lowe throws an intercept pass. It's those sort of things that every time you think the Lions have sort of overcome that hurdle, every time you think that they're going to do well, they produce a performance like this. And you just think to yourself, geez, something is deeper wrong at the Lions. And I've said it several times and I know I've been taken to task by some of the management for it. But yeah, there is a lot of concern that why they can't get over that hump and why they're so inconsistent.
And just getting back to the Durban game, you'd also sense that well-drilled Leinster defense that you spoke of, which may get them the job done most of the time in the URC, isn't necessarily sort of universally praised and accepted in the wider sort of Irish rugby sphere, because there has been criticism of the Jacques Nienaber influence on their defensive system. Well, he doesn't coach Ireland, but they're talking about the high number of Leinster players representing Ireland and how that might impact Ireland, which I thought was an interesting talking point.
Yeah, and I think let's try and play the clip as well for that. And just so you can hear, it was on Off the Ball and that started the whole debate. So let's listen to the clip.
And it's the question I think everybody's asking. Mm-hmm. How destabilizing effect has Jacques Nienaber's appointment had on Irish rugby by coming into the bulk supplier to the Irish team?
You can't concentrate on all the things and optimize them all the time. And so if the greater portion of the current Irish team are spending most of their week-to-week time on learning a brand new defense, which they've never done before, you could argue, you know, that's the reason why the skill sets are dropping. That's why the accuracy's dropping in attack. You could certainly argue that.
Absolutely, you could. And it's the question I think everybody's asking. Mm-hmm. How destabilizing effect has Jacques Nienaber's appointment had on Irish rugby by coming into the bulk supplier to the Irish team with a completely radical overhaul of the defence and a greater emphasis on defence? And it's worked with Leinster to a degree. They're conceding much less points, but all their attacking metrics are down in the last couple of years. But it hasn't had a considerable good effect for Ireland. If anything, I think it's destabilised the Irish defence because it's a different defensive system and they're now conceding more line breaks, missing more tackles. And it's kind of this all-around-to-the-outside-in approach that they're sometimes adopting with Ireland, but it's not working. It's like if Ireland had lost at the weekend, there would have been much greater emphasis on James Lowe twice coming in off his wing and leaving the space on the edge, which was vacated for Capoulos in the first instance and Leonardo Marina in the second instance to get past Gary Ringrose and Conor Murray, who were each trying to cover. But they were both despairing covering tackles because James Lowe had employed the Nienaber defence, if you like.
Yeah, I know as a 10, different 10s with different preferences, I absolutely loved playing against the Nienaber Leinster defence because they made the decisions for you. They made the mistakes. You just had to be patient enough and have the bottle. So I could get absolutely smashed here. If you wait till the last minute, someone jumps out and you put a player in the hole. So it requires, you know, patience in attack. I found it much harder to play against what the Irish defence is because it's very hard to create holes and space. You've got to be very patient and strategic. So I was an instinctive player and loved playing the more instinctive attack against that rush defence. Strategists like Raj and Johnny Sexton probably preferred playing against the more measured defence because they would calmly break it down over six phases and seven phases and hold possession and put players in positions for three, four phases in advance and then eventually they'd break it down. So it requires your quarterback to be good in attack.
Yeah, it's a strange one because Irish rugby tends to look for a bit of a scapegoat when things goes wrong. And Jock is, you know, he's an exceptional coach, but he is an outsider to them. And sometimes he's an easy target for them. I think it's a bit unfair. I think modern professional rugby players, if that's your craft, you should be able to switch between game plans and defensive systems. I don't think most players are, it's that big a deal for them to do. And plus, I think also, it's not like they weren't in camp for Six Nations for quite a while, and they weren't playing throughout the tournament. So they're going to come back, and the one big loss that they obviously is the one against France, is the one that cost them the championship. But you've lost one game in an entire tournament, and you make such a big deal about it. I find it rather bizarre. And before you answer, maybe we should just, I asked Leo Cullen about it on Saturday as well, and he sort of sidestepped the answer because obviously Jacques's quite important to him. So I think we know where he stands on Jacques. But yeah, a very short, direct answer that he gave. But yeah, I don't think Leo's going to be changing Jacques the way Jacques coaches very soon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as in Jack, he's a world-class coach. You know, he's been at the very top of the game for a long time now, so and had some outstanding success. So he's very passionate about what he does, and listen, we're lucky to have him.
And the other point, I suppose, if you drill a bit deeper, is that Ireland for the last while has had this almost over-reliance on their supply of Leinster players, the production line that comes from Leinster. And it probably doesn't bode well for the rest of their rugby. I mean, if you look at what's happened at the other franchises over the last few years, there's been lots of coaching movements and coaching upheaval, if you want to call it that, at Connacht and Ulster more recently. That can't be great. I mean, if your top team in your shield is leading the second team by 24 points with only two teams in the top eight, does beg questions of their production line elsewhere.
It does, definitely. And there's an interesting thing I saw on the log this week. Leinster are the only Irish franchise that have a better points difference and don't have a negative points difference. All the other three Irish teams have a negative points difference. So it's a strange season. And I mean, Leinster's obviously been successful, so you would expect that. But it also is a bit of a testament to Jacques' defensive system as well. And so to me, I had a thought during the Six Nations that maybe they've hung Andy Farrell and Simon Easterby maybe have hung on to certain players for too long and maybe not developed youngsters. And there you've got to give the box a lot of credit. And the French, they've developed a lot of new players coming through in the last year. But Ireland haven't, other than Sam Prendergast, who gets quite a lot of flack still from the Irish public as well. There hasn't really been too many players coming through. So I think the Irish system is creaking a bit. And they're looking for scapegoats at the moment. I think they thought they were shoo-in to win the Six Nations. And some of the reactions have been quite bizarre, to be very honest.
Mm. Look, I mean, it's not as if they've made this huge plunge, and it's not like they're plummeting down the mountaintop or anything like that. I mean, they have a standing coach now. Andy Farrell obviously engaged with the Lions this year. So they do have a couple of things to look forward to. And there's a lot in their system that works. So I'm not suggesting for one moment they're going to go away anytime soon. But obviously there are some issues, like with every other country, that kind of need to.
I think the other thing as well is quite interesting, because the Lions tour is going to be an interesting one to see the makeup of their team. Because I think we've all assumed that the Lions will dominate the series. But Australian rugby has been making some strides in the last year, especially with Joe Schmidt there. And this week, it's quite interesting to see all the Australian franchises in the top six of Super Rugby Pacific. So there's a bit of a resurgence going on in Australian rugby. So, yeah, it might be a bit more spicy than we expect that series.
Yeah, and I think you also know with Joe Schmidt, obviously he knows Ireland, and that there will be, given his tactical nous, his tactical acumen, that he's gonna ask some interesting questions of them. That's not going to be a straightforward series.
That's the one thing I think people always think about you coaching or Joe Schmidt coaching Australia. But, having been in Ireland, he knows many of those players very well. And he knows their weaknesses very well as well. I know teams do unbelievable sort of analysis on each other. But it's a different thing when you coach the player personally and you know what makes them tick and what ticks them off, if I can put it that way. And I think he's probably going to use some of that in the tour. So it's going to be interesting. That tour, of course, that's the big tour for the year. But yeah, well, I suppose we must get back to URC then, because I wanted to say to you, one of the things that caught my eye, and I thought, let's clip the chat after the press conference, because Jake was quite taken back. And I won't say offended is not the word, but he didn't like the fact that I'm saying that this was Leinster's B team. And now he made the point, and I'd like you to listen to the audio and give your thought, but he made the point that Arche Snyman should be playing for the Bulls and that Leinster might be missing their 16 players, but the Bulls are missing a lot more than that because of all the players that have been poached overseas over the last couple of years. Before you react, let's play Jake's argument. It's quite an interesting long one. And tell us if you agree.
I mean, look at Arche. Shouldn't he be playing for the Bulls? I'm asking. Don't you think he should be playing for the Bulls? Well, then home form and everything falls into place. You know, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, you guys saw that game tonight. The one guy in the forwards that controls everything is Arche, and the one guy in the backs that controls everything is Jordy Barrett. Now, I think between them, you know, how many tests, they probably got more test matches than we've got URC games. So, I mean, that's why I said don't underestimate that when you have a tight-head prop who's played for France and you have a lock who's won two World Cups and you have a, you know, a centre that controls all their attack. And he moved from 12 to 15 and they didn't take him off because they realised how important he was to their team. So I'm answering by saying our home form is not, it's not a switch. But I'm going to keep, you know, keep saying to you guys that if we had Arche and we had those players who would be playing in South Africa, I can tell you our home form would be completely different. Because we'd be stronger and our team would have more depth and our, and that takes nothing away from the guys who came on today. I'm really happy for them. But, you know, I'm longing for the day I can stand in the change room and look and see there's 23 Springboks sitting in the change room. That is my pipe dream while I'm at the Bulls. But I think if they've got 16 internationals missing, I think we've got about 28 internationals missing because they're all playing overseas. So again, I'm going to keep telling you, they're not here. So if we have all those internationals that like are playing overseas coming back here, then we will have 28 internationals as well. And I'm not even talking about the ones that are injured that are here. I'm talking about the ones that are playing overseas. And I want to ask you, if you go into a competition and you're competing with a team like Leinster that bring in Slimani, who's a French prop, and Arche, and Jordy Barrett. I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying? You've got to compare apples with apples. Now we have X amount of players playing overseas, and then you've got to pick from within. We don't have international players. I understand that, and I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. We don't sign Kiwis and Fijians and those kind of players to play for us. So our pool of players is so it's easy to say they're missing all the internationals. Well, let me tell you guys, if I brought every Bulls player that played here back, we would also have about 20 internationals. Pollard, Arche, Jesse Creel, Faf. I mean, we can go through. I'm sorry, Faf wasn't, it was at the Lions. But the point is, there's so many players that are Andre Liebenberg, and the list just goes on and on and on, you know. So we've also got players that are playing abroad that would make us so much better. And I have said it to you many times before, because I hear the sort of narrative is, yeah, but the other players that are here wouldn't be given that chance. Well, maybe not. But don't you think Arche playing for us, teaching Jeff and teaching, you know, Reinhard Ludwig at training is as important as he is playing there and teaching them? That's all. No, there is not enough money. But if we don't bring them back, there will be no money in South African rugby because sponsors aren't going to keep putting money into a competition where the best players are playing against you. I mean, that makes sense, surely. Why would big sponsors put money in when the 200 best players are playing away? You don't think that's going to happen. You think eventually we're just going to keep producing all these youngsters and the sponsors are going to keep putting money in. I mean, if I was a sponsor, I wouldn't be putting money into a competition where I didn't see the best players playing. That was from the first days of signing the Super Rugby competition. That was the deal is when we entered Super Rugby, there was a fear that we wouldn't have our best players playing in Super Rugby. So they had to sign a participation agreement about. So all I'm saying to you is there enough money? Probably not. But I'm old school. I do think that if you want to come back and play for South Africa and if you want to look after the franchises, then surely we must have the best players. I mean, guys, you saw how good Arche is. Why is he not playing for the Bulls? Explain to me. If you guys tell me why, you say it's money. Well, then we're never going to get it right. We're never going to get it right, boys. That's, I can tell you. Then it's like me talking to the wall. But the bottom line is they should be playing, and that's where they play. They play here. That's where they grow up. That's the lessons. I mean, I said it this week. Why can't he teach Jeff and Reinhard Ludwig and those guys all the things he's learned about winning two World Cups?
Why should he be sharing that intel to other overseas players? And I want to make sure we all understand this. Where did he learn it from? Do you know where he learned it from? From players who were playing in South Africa. Victor, Bakis, those guys. That's where they learned it from. Luit, Franco Mostert, Peter Steph Du Toit. They learned it from the group that was in South Africa. There weren't players playing overseas that couldn't share that with them. So the model of having those guys here works.
It does sound a lot like, I get some of the overall argument, but it does also sound like a coach that's deflecting. The fact that South African players in large numbers play abroad, talking about some of our top players, the top Springboks play abroad, this has been going on for a while. It's like somebody crying over spilt milk. I mean, milk that is by now quite sour, to be honest. He knew the size of the job when he took it. To suggest that all those players who are gone, and to presume that all of them would necessarily also want to come back and play for the Bulls, is another matter. Would they want to play there? Well, maybe you want to play the Stormers or the Sharks or whatever. You know, that's one thing, looking at that list of players of what might have been or what could be, which is, as things stand, fairly detached from reality. This is not something that's going to change overnight. So it sounds like he's obsessing a fair amount on something that is unlikely to be solved in the short or even medium term.
Yeah.
He probably needs to focus a little bit more on what's in front of him. Because if you're going to obsess about something that is really a little bit out of your control, then you know, you're probably not spending your energy in the right way.
I'll go back to something somebody said to me a couple of years ago, and it was he wasn't a Springbok, but he was a decent provincial rugby player who went to play overseas and is now coaching in France as an assistant coach to one of the teams. And he did say to me, he said, part of the problem in South African rugby is that we've got so much talent coming through that coaches don't have to coach as much at the top level. That they get this because there's always the next guy coming through. And whereas in other countries, Ireland being one, there are limited resources. And your systems have to be so good that those limited resources can be utilized to the maximum effect. Yeah, in South Africa, we for a long time operated from the thing, well, okay, he's going overseas. The next guy's going to come through. And in the stage in Super Rugby, we were playing with very young teams because a lot of players were going through. So that's the first point. The second, so I think there needs to be a lot more coaching done in South Africa because I hear what he says about Erke transferring back. But then I think to myself, he does have a point about players leaving. And just looking at the Bulls and Locks, in the time that Erke came through, his under 20 lock partner was Erne Herbst, who was at Benetton and now is at Harlequins. Paul Willemse was there just before them. It was the end era of Victor and Bakkies. They sort of finished off as Erke got there. Luit came in. They bought Luit as well and brought him in. And then a guy like Eli Snyman, who's also played in Italy, you see him quite often playing for Italy, was also there just after Erke. Yeah. So if you look at all those players, if they had kept everybody, where would Erke play? I mean, he's a superstar, so he'd probably stand out. But you'd have to lose somebody like Paul Willemse or Eli Snyman or Erne Herbst, who are very decent, good professional players, wouldn't get a spot to play. And so in that respect, there's the argument that they've actually given themselves a career by going somewhere else where they might not have had at the Bulls. So I think, every coach says they want to, they never get to pick the team they want and because there's injuries and there's always other factors involved.
But that is the job of the coach. You exactly. Deal with what you have in front of you from one week to the next. That's the nature of this competition.
But yeah, Jake's an old schoolmaster, so he likes to give us a school lesson every now and again. So
yeah, he does own up to that. He does say he's old school. But I mean, can you imagine if a football coach, a soccer coach, made that kind of argument? Because I mean, it's obviously a global sport in the true sense of it, and you kind of have to accept market forces for what they are.
I think where Jake's argument will be helped is if rugby actually eventually adopts a transfer system. And we've seen smatterings of this, but when especially South African and Argentinian teams can get rewarded for the players they produce, then the playing fields might be a bit more level because then you could have the financial muscle to keep those players you want. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure it's always going to happen. And yeah, anyway, I mean, Jake's got a tricky game. Zebre this weekend is a tough one for them, because if they play as badly as they did on Saturday, yeah, they might have a really tough time.
In fact, we should probably run very quickly through predictions.
Well, we can talk a bit about, let's talk a bit first about the South African games. I think that's probably the best way of doing it. Bulls Zebre are very tricky, but you'd give it to the Bulls any day of the week. If they play as badly as they did this last week, they might be in trouble, but I can't see them losing against Zebre. I'd say Bulls by 10 points at least.
No. Yeah, they might be uncomfortable pockets in that game, but yeah, you don't see them being overly troubled.
Yeah, Sharks, Leinster are going to probably bring in some of the internationals again. I think they'll be targeting it for the win. And John Plumtree, if he can get his team to stick to the script, they should be able to do it. But that's the big clash this weekend for me.
Thinking Leinster by a few, yeah. Leinster by 7.
I think if there is a game, and just because the Sharks haven't been consistent, and Leinster are very good at exploiting your frailty. So, and the Sharks do have quite a few of them. They're getting better. The news, they signed Edwolf and Amava this weekend, which is in report. Andrew Cronier broke that story. It was a good story. That backline of them next year is going to be exceptional if they have everyone fit. Where you fit everybody in is the real question.
Well, yeah.
But at least there's enough games for them to do that.
Yeah. That takes us now to Ulster Stormers, which, geez, a year or so, 2 years ago, you'd have said probably Ulster win by 10, 12 points in their favorable conditions. But you can't say that now.
Yeah, I think the Stormers have turned the corner. I mean, they scored some bizarre, amazing tries this weekend against Scarlets. Really something that will be on the highlights reels all season. So they seem to be getting their confidence back. And I think that's got a lot to do with getting guys like Sasha back and guys like Warwick Hlund playing at full confidence. They've really got some great players then. If they can keep them fit, if they can do that, they'll have a good chance in Belfast. The thing that Ulster haven't been that good for me this season. They've really struggled.
Yeah.
And the fact that the log's so congested has kept them in the run there. But I think we really could see a three of the South African sides in the top six if the Stormers get on a good run. And I think they've got the confidence at the moment.
Well, the other team, that South African team we haven't talked about in the context of this weekend, is the Lions. They have the unenviable task of facing Glasgow Warriors away. They slipped up last week on two fronts. You obviously miss out on the win, but it's also a handing opposition who is trying to cement their place in the top eight, handing them the 4 points or the five, in this case, 4 points. I know they've got this home run a little bit later on, but they've left themselves with a little bit to do. Now, suddenly this game becomes a slightly bigger one. Had they won in Cardiff, less pressure on them in this one, but now they kind of have to throw a lot more at it.
Yeah. We had Julian Redden and Hayes, the scrum coach, chat to us yesterday. I'm going to play his clip quickly now. But he also spoke about the massive task they have against Glasgow and how they've disappointed and made it tougher for themselves. So let's have a listen to that clip first.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we also frustrated you guys, but from our side, it was frustrating. If you look at those stats, like you guys said, you would think the team dominated. I think they were smart on the evening. They got 10 balls that they kicked. They got him back. So we were slow to react towards their kicking game and to make sure we secure those balls. We were slow to react to their attacking or to fix our attacking breakdown up early in the game, where they actually made it really slow and made it ugly for us, where we didn't control that better certain times of the game. So, like you said, it was a really frustrating game, unfortunate result for us. And even though we really didn't play like we wanted to and didn't do what we wanted to, we still had an opportunity to win it at the end and unfortunately couldn't get it over the line or on the line. So there's lots for us to fix this week. But yeah, I'm sure the guys will respond really well after this weekend's disappointment. Yeah, I think what I can say is for us, the learning when you're playing with the wind or against the wind, whether you're playing in dry conditions or you're playing in wetter conditions, almost, I think we did expect them to play the way that they were going to play. I just think, oh, it was for us in the moment. We were playing actually with the wind. They were kicking against the wind, and the kicks ended up being shorter than we thought. And then we don't catch the ball out of the end. It's almost like a confusing space between the front cars and the back cars. So it just, we didn't adapt early enough. So for us, like you rightfully said, if we want to play well against Glasgow this weekend, and they do come up with different strategies, or the weather changes, the ability for us to adapt earlier and adapt better, you know, that is something that is a must for us.
Julian's always a straight shooter, and I think that's one of the things we love about him.
Yeah,
you know,
love that about
scrum
him.
Coach. So his department normally does pretty well. So, but there is something at the Lions that's a miss. As I said a bit earlier, I mean, we're dominating the stats like they did, but there's some mental aspect that they don't seem to get over those hurdles when they need to get over them. And I'm really worried about the Lions. I think they're banking too much on this home run, and they just have to have one bad game in that home run and everything's blown to pieces. Glasgow are going to be tough. I can't see them beating Glasgow at home. Yeah, Edinburgh next week in the Challenge Cup, that they've got more of a chance in, but not against Glasgow. I think Glasgow will win handily.
And the harsh reality is, if the Lions don't make the top eight, they missed out by a very slender margin last season. It will be three seasons of disappointment, of almost, well, it'll be similar disappointment, because obviously breaking into the top eight would be, and then they would have to do something. You can't just repeat, rinse and repeat, and hoping for a different result.
Well, they tend to rinse and repeat every year anyway. I think the most glaring thing they changed 3 years ago was they changed all the assistant coaches, but they kept the head coach. So now you got to ask yourself, if nothing's changed since then, is it the head coach? I don't know. Those are tough decisions that they have to make. But sometimes you get the idea that they almost content to be just outside the top eight. Well, yeah. I don't think the players necessarily, but other elements at the Lions are pretty almost content to be outside the top eight.
Yeah. If you think about it, the South African part or component of the URC from a coaching perspective has almost been the most, there's been more continuity there if you compare to elsewhere in the competition. I think only the John Plumtree going to the Sharks being a major shift in the last few years. For the rest, we've kept the ship steady, but you know, sometimes it gets to a point where you have to make.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people, obviously people involved take it personally, but at the end of the day, it's like any job, you know, people move jobs in their normal careers, and it's just, maybe they need a change, or maybe the situation doesn't suit them, and maybe it's time for renewal. So I don't think it's anything personal. I think sometimes a coach takes his team as far as he can.
Well, Brendan, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, who's to say I'll be sitting here in a few months? You know, things change. You just never know. And before you ask, no, I'm not taking up coaching. I mean, that's enough to drive you to the grave.
I was really worried there for a moment that you were planning to take on Evan Froin's coaching job, but I'm not sure you could even get it right at this spot.
No.
So, but that's true. Let's go quickly through the other games, because there are a few others, and we do a quick fire round of just sort of predictions. Starting off Friday night, the other game, Ulster play Stormers, obviously we've spoken about. Edinburgh, 11th, play the Dragons, 16th.
Yeah, we didn't actually make a prediction on that one, did we?
On Ulster Stormers? No, well, we didn't. You're right. But I think Stormers should take that one, I think, by five. It'll be close.
I'm going to go Stormers by... Yeah, I'm going to go Stormers by five.
Okay. Edinburgh Dragons, I'd say Edinburgh being at home, probably give it to them. But I don't think this is two teams that are really going to contest in the top eight later.
Edinburgh by 21.
Big win there. You're not a big Dragons fan, I take it. Okay, so like,
yeah. No, it's not. Edinburgh's been very up and down, but they're capable of putting, you know, some decent results together. I mean, they have put some decent results together as well. I mean, they have been capricious, but on their day, they've looked impressive.
And they should have some of their Scotland stars back, so that'll make a big difference, I think, as well. Saturday is a big derby in Ireland. Connacht hosting Munster. Connacht 12th, Munster 6th. I'd say probably Munster, but derbies are tough ones to call.
Yeah, you kind of want to say Munster, but you know what? I'm going to say a draw.
Oh, okay. Throw it out there. They have to happen sometime in life. A draw. So the other one, another Welsh derby at 5 o'clock, Scarlet's Ospreys. And this one being taken by Griffin Colby in only seventh professional game. I know there's been a lot of talk online and amongst the Welsh supporters whether that was the right decision. But yeah, if you're really worrying about which ref is refing you, then you're not concentrating on what your team needs to do.
The other interesting thing is if you look at the two, it's the perfect game for Griffin Colby, perhaps, if you look at the team logos he's going to officiate on. But let that be. Look, there's a lot for Ospreys to chase in this game because, I mean, they're trying to keep their spot in the top eight, or at least sort of get themselves into a position where they can hold on to a position there. So not a simple game for them, but I think because there's more to play for them, I think we'll get the job done.
Yeah. And then the only other game that we haven't spoken about, Benetton, who are 10th, hosting Cardiff, who are 5th in Stadio Monigo. I would say, even though Benetton are 10th, they'll have all the Italian players back. I think they
suddenly becomes win by 7. Tougher game for Cardiff. I'll go Benetton win as well, maybe by 8, if not more.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. That's our show today. It's been an interesting one there. Lots of talking points to talk about. Yeah. And just I want to sign off by saying maybe just sharing a story from my youth, Liam. Were you lucky enough to ever deal with Alex Griswiley when he was a coach at the Lions?
Oh, yes. We didn't speak about Gris.
He was definitely a character. And I must admit, one of my memories of him, and I told the story on Twitter this week, was we were standing on the side there by Wanderers when they used to coach there. And I think it was myself and two other, Henny Brunt and Peter Kruger, Bommy, some of the old school journos. And he was shouting, and things weren't going right for the scrum. They were having a scrumming session. And we were waiting on the side just to talk to the coach. And at some point, he started swearing, which he did quite a lot of Grizz. He wasn't shy with the expletives. And at some point, he turned to us and he said, "Media!" And I won't repeat the expletives, but he had several of them and told us to get over to where he was on the field. And we did. And as we got there, he said, "Do your effing job. Get on the effing scrum machine now." And about 30 seconds later, myself and the other journos were on top of the scrum machine as Bali Swart, Quibus Visa, and a bunch of them pummeled into that scrum machine. And we were doing our job according to the Grizz. It was quite a funny thing. It's one of the weirdest times. The only time I've been on a scrum machine during a live practice. And we were given a working over. So.
Yeah, I had something similar. I missed out on Grizz. I moved to Joburg just after that. I had the pleasure of Davi Snyman for the tail end of his career at the Lions. And something very similar at Rao when they had a practice. And he shouted something along, oddly enough, with same journalists that you referred to earlier, to make ourselves useful and stand on the, you know, add some weight to the, I don't know if you asked me for weight, but anyway. And
well, in my case.
We went through a similar thing. I think it was it Buxton Nell? Somebody got in on the angle slightly and missed the padding and got cut in the hit, which made for an interesting line or two in the copy later on.
I can imagine. Listen, these little things that don't get reported on. You wrote a book about all these little things that don't get reported there. We should actually do a show on that some point and just talk about some of the funny stories of our careers.
Anecdotal stuff. Yeah. There's, you know, geez, we're going to miss so much.
But where's there a week when rugby doesn't dominate? But anyway. Just wanted to send our condolences to Grizz's family. He was truly a rugby man, certainly a very imposing figure. One of the few people I've been scared of in rugby, because I think in his playing days, he'd scare quite a few people. But what a character, and definitely one of the bigger characters of rugby that has been lost. Rest in peace and condolences to his family.
Yeah, and also, if you just look at the tributes that have come in, especially from former Los Pumas captain, Augustine Pischer, who would have played under Chris and would have been sort of molded and shaped under his hand. Wonderful tributes coming in. So, RIP.
Yeah, he meant a lot to Argentinian rugby as well, and especially the modern Argentinian game. So, that's it for us. That's the show. We'll see you next week. It's been great chatting again. And, enjoy the rugby this weekend.
Been fun. See you then.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacaranda.fm.com or the Jackpot app.